Before I begin today, I want to acknowledge a considerable debt for the exegetical work of behind this sermon to a paper that was written on the psalm text that Barbara read for us, a paper written by Patrick Wilson for a meeting of the Movable Feast Study Group in California some years ago. In one of his autobiographical essays, Frederick Buechner recalled a turning point in his life. The year was 1953, and Buechner was still single, living here in New York City and trying to write a novel, which, as he said, for one reason or another, was just refusing to come to life. Next door to his apartment, there happened to be a church, the Madison Avenue Presbyterian Church, whose pastor at the time was a man named George Buttrick. Depressed as he was about his novel and with time heavy on his hands, Buechner started going to hear Buttrick preach because he found him well worth the hearing, given what Buechner described as Buttrick's oddly ragged eloquence and the way he could take words you had heard all your life and make you hear them and the holiness in them as though for the first time. Buechner wrote, "It was in the middle of December that he said something in a sermon that has always stayed with me. He said that on the previous Sunday, as he was leaving the church to go home, he happened to overhear someone out on the steps asking somebody else, 'Are you going home for Christmas?' And," said Buechner, "I can almost see Buttrick with his glasses glimmering in the lectern light as he peered out at all those people listening to him in that sanctuary and asked it again, 'Are you going home for Christmas?' And asked it in some sort of way that brought tears to my eyes and made it almost unnecessary for him to move on to answer the question, which was that home finally is the manger at Bethlehem, the place where at midnight even the oxen kneel." There's something about the holidays, I think, something about that month or so of days that began Thursday and on Thanksgiving and will continue until Christmas, something that stirs in us memories of home and maybe even a longing for home, for the old and familiar spaces and for the people who inhabit or inhabited them, even if they are better in our memories than they ever were in reality, or even if they were worse than that. Some of us are young enough to remember our first months away at college and doubtless can remember how much homesickness sneaked in at times to surprise and startle us. But it's not just during the first undergraduate year that it happens. It can happen any time. A graduating senior down in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, told me several years ago how she dreaded the real world that was coming fast and how she wished she could go back and simply be a child at home again. I told her that even in my dotage, I sometimes felt the same way. Such a longing for home is part and parcel of the lives most of us live for as long as we live. Sometimes it's the longing for a particular place with the familiar sights and sounds and scents and foods that and comforts that made it home. More often it's some aching for a family now separated by miles or by death or by hardship or by deep divides and hurts, the families we once knew and missed so palpably. For many in this world, such a notion of home is a matter of longing, but not of experience. I think of Central American refugees, many of them on the move, some risking their lives at the hands of unscrupulous transporters in search of a home place, safe place, away from the fear that will let them in and give them a chance to make a home. And I think of the obstacles so many of them face, and seeing such hopes through to fulfillment in these days, largely due to other people's fears. I think of the fire victims in California, completely displaced from their homes and from their decimated communities. And though they escaped with their lives, unlike so many in places where the fire advanced with lightning speed, their lives are now forever altered and in so many ways displaced. I think of countless young adults who have made their way to this city in search of whatever success, start on a career, a break. I think of the loneliness of life in this city for those who are here alone, with eyes rarely meeting on the sidewalks and people who don't know the names of those who inhabit the apartments on either side. Are you going home for Christmas? The notion of home is complex at times. I think of Emily Scheck, a sophomore cross-country athlete up at Canisius College in Buffalo, who shared with her mother news of a new love in her life, a love who happened to be another young woman on the team, and who was then given an ultimatum by her mother: come home and get treatment or be banished from the family. It still happens. NBC News reported this week that the NCAA is going to allow Ms. Scheck to keep her eligibility, even though a teammate had organized a GoFundMe account that had raised more than $60,000 to help with her ongoing college expenses. Good news, I guess, but sad news at best, as yet another young person is cut off from home. The notion of home is complex at times. I think of Faye Wells, an African-American woman who's vice president for strategy at a Los Angeles-based company. In the Washington Post some time back, she told of an evening when she locked herself out of her Santa Monica apartment. She did what any of us might do. She called a locksmith and he came, unlocked her door. Then a short while later, 19 uniformed officers surrounded her apartment and demanded at gunpoint that she leave her home while they searched it. A neighbor had called 911 to report a possible break-in. Wells wrote, "It didn't matter that I told the police I'd lived there for 7 months, told them about the locksmith, offered to show a receipt for his services and my ID. Didn't matter that I went to Duke and have an MBA from Dartmouth, that I'm a vice president of a multinational corporation. Didn't matter that I've never had so much as a speeding ticket. Didn't matter that I calmly, continually asked them what was happening. Didn't matter that I didn't even match the description of the person they were looking for. My neighbor described me as Hispanic when he called 911. What mattered was that I was a woman of color trying to get into her apartment in an almost entirely white apartment complex in a mostly white city, and a white man who lived in another building from mine called the cops." So of course, the officers eventually cleared the apartment and let Wells back in unharmed, but the trauma of that night left her shaken. "I'm heartbroken that my neighbor's careless assessment of me based on my skin color could endanger my life. I'm heartbroken by the sense of terror I got from people whose jobs it was to protect me. I'm heartbroken that the place I call home no longer feels safe. I'm heartbroken that no matter how many times a story like this is told, it will happen again." There are many, many such stories and other stories of those with mental illness forced to wander the streets with no safe place to lay their heads, of those who are the victims of abuse in their own homes, who lack the resources or the courage to move out. So many stories, so much fear, so much longing for home. Those of us who live in relative tranquility cannot imagine the strain of wanting and needing and not finding a safe place to call home. We cannot imagine it. The scriptures, too, seem full of descriptions of people in search of home. Abraham and Sarah and Abram's family wandering through the desert, the Hebrew slaves in their Exodus struggles, exiles who find it hard to sing the Lord's song in a foreign land, the cloud of witnesses and Hebrews who considered themselves strangers and foreigners on the earth, always in search of a homeland. The longing for home lodges deep in the human heart and psyche, and with it, a longing for God. You have made us for yourself, prayed St. Augustine in the 4th century. You have made us for yourself, and our hearts are restless until they find their rest in thee. Such restlessness and longing for home are integral to the human identity. They find their expression in many ways, but in the scriptures they find a particular locus in what we know as pilgrim psalms. Songs for people on the move toward home. These psalms are, as Patrick Wilson says, traveling music for people on their way home with God. I was glad when they said to me, "Let us go to the house of the Lord," sings the 122nd psalm. They wanted to go to the house of the Lord. They wanted to go home. Worshippers made their way to the temple in Jerusalem annually. And these pilgrim psalms, or psalms of ascent, as they are called, for going up Mount Zion, supplied music not only for their journey, but also for their celebrations once they arrived at their destination. Not all of these pilgrim psalms are so glad about going to the house of the Lord, however. For people then, as now, journeying to God was not a straightforward, uncomplicated business. They journeyed with joy and with heartache, with hope and with the fear that all their hopes might amount to nothing, packing on their backs the weight of hope and bearing the risk of disappointment. They made their journeys, and on their way they sang their songs. Like other nostalgic songs, our psalm today, the 132nd psalm, yearns for a home. A home remembered from days gone by, home with God and in God, a home yearned for and prayed for. Together, the people recall and sing to God about how life for them as a people used to be, and they call on God to remember as well. O Lord, they sing, remember in David's favor all the hardship he endured in building a tabernacle where the people could gather with God. They sing of the place where what was broken could be mended and what was wrong could be made right. Home is where you can bring your hurts. Home with God is where the healing happens. They remember and they sing. The tenor section picks up the psalm now, remembering how it once was. They sing the Ark of the Covenant, the visible sign of God's presence, and remember carrying it into the tabernacle. They remember and they pray, "Rise up, O Lord, and go to your resting place." That phrase, resting place, speaks once more of home, you see. They pray that God will be there. And they're on a journey based on such a hope, but they wonder. After all the visible reminders of God's presence in the past are gone now. The dynasty David had built was no more than an enchanting remembrance. And the temple, Solomon's grand temple, lay in ruins. They would gladly worship even among the temple ruins, but they wonder if God will even be there. And then, says Patrick Wilson, just when their song seems most heartbreakingly poignant, another voice interrupts their melody. A solo voice. This voice does not sing of what must be remembered, and it does not sing of what must be done and has not yet been done, and it does not propose any sort of requirement, but chants a new promise, a new and open future, and a deep yearning. deeper even than the pilgrim's yearning. The voice is God's voice, and it rings with unqualified promises. This is my resting place. This is my home. Forever here I will reside. Here I will make my home, for I have desired it. In spite of the ruins of the temple, in spite of the ruins of our lives, God declares, here I will make a home. In spite of all the conditional loyalties and failings of David's children, God announces, here I will make a home. And why? Why does God do so? For I have desired it, God says. I have desired it. What a startling assertion. Just as we long for home, God longs for home too. And so God makes a home. Where? God makes a home among the people, among those who journey toward God, yearn for God, wonder about God, pray to God, sometimes want to give up on God, but are here nonetheless. Here I will make a home, says the Lord, for I have desired it. And so the pilgrim is invited to come. Once here, once home, all the pilgrim has to do is trust. All the other verbs are I verbs from God. I will abundantly bless. I will satisfy the poor. I will clothe. Once home, the only task of the pilgrim of God is to trust. God will provide the rest here in God's home. If it seems too odd to speak of God's longing for home on this last Sunday of the Christian year, Patrick Wilson says that maybe we should think back to the very beginning of that year, to the promise of an angel whispered in a dream. They shall call him Emmanuel, which means God is with us. On this last Sunday of the church year, we're bold to claim the promise of the angel's announcement. And we can also remember how the story of God and of God's people turns out at the very end of the scriptures. A loud voice calls from the throne saying, behold, the home of God is among mortals. God will dwell with them as their God. They will be God's peoples because God has desired it, has longed for it from the very beginning. The reign of Christ is our dwelling place and our home. On this last Sunday of the church year, I can think of no more important promise than that one, and no more fortifying thought than that our longing for home in these days is met and matched by God's longing. And what we both long for the most in the end is each other. It's each other. And if that be the case, people of God, should it not then be the word that opens our hearts and our arms to all those who are struggling to find home in these days?